This is Only a Game. I'm Karen Given. George Floyd's funeral was held this week in Houston. He was remembered as a father, a brother, a mentor, and an athlete. Here's Cyril White. He recruited George Floyd to play on his exhibition basketball team in the late 90s.
The coaches would ask me, who's your big man? I would say, George Floyd. They say, oh, you got Big Floyd. Okay, well, your team must be pretty good.
Floyd played college basketball at what was then known as South Florida Community College, and his death at the hands of police has inspired a loud response from the sports world. Last week, North Carolina Central head men's basketball coach Lavelle Moten called out college coaches who make millions a year off the talents of young, mostly black athletes, and yet don't speak up against racism and police brutality. Here he is on ESPN Radio.
It's not the blatant racism that we can't deal with. That's easily identifiable. But it's the guys that's pretending to say they love and care for us that's not speaking up on our behalf. That's the danger.
Moten's perspective wasn't born of recent news. It's the product of a lifetime of experiences. Coach Moten, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you for having me.
So I'd like you to start with the first time you had a negative interaction with the police.
You guys are in Boston, correct?
Yes.
Well, I grew up in Roxbury in a housing project called Orchard Park. And at an early age, my mom migrated down to Raleigh, North Carolina. So I would say my first instance was I was 12 years old. Back then, I wanted to go on AAU trips. And in order to fund my AAU trips, I would always go sell magazine subscriptions. So I knew to go to the affluent neighborhoods. And this particular day, I'm coming back, and I had a good day. I'm selling magazine subscriptions and everything. And as I'm walking back home, I'm counting my money, and a cop, he's probably driving 3-4 miles an hour while I'm walking. And the first thing he says is, boy, where you get that money from? He rolled down his window, and I didn't answer because, you know, I at that age, and even now, I'm nobody's boy. Like, I just thought that had a negative connotation to it. And as I continued to walk, he continued to drive. He said, boy, did you hear what I said? Where did you get that money from? That's crack money, ain't it? And I said, no, this ain't no crack money. Like, it's magazine subscription money. And I knew no 12-year-old tells a cop that it's magazine subscription money. So he cut me off. He got out the car and made me spread eagle. And he checked my pockets, and I think he was checking for drugs, you know, crack, because this was the inception of the crack era, right? So this is the mid-80s that I'm telling you about. And he reached in my back pocket, he took my money, and then he took the rest of it out of my hand. And I remember going home, and I was crying to my mom, and I wasn't crying because I was violated by him. I was more so crying because I didn't think I would be able to go on my AAU trip simply because he took my money.
All right. So let's fast forward about 20 years to 2005. You were in Raleigh and in a car with Raymond Felton. And just a few months before this incident, Felton had helped to lead UNC to an NCAA title.
Felton, long three. That wasn't only beyond the arc. That was beyond the arch here in St. Louis.
Can you describe what happened that night?
I have a black Yukon Denali, and the windows are kind of tinted, and I'm in my old neighborhood, and I was coming from visiting some friends, and I'm on the phone with my mom, and I see in my rear view a car following me, a cop car, and I say, Mom, I'm gonna call you back because I'm being followed and I know I'm about to be pulled. And she said, no, you stay on the phone with me. And I knew what was about to happen, and I didn't want her to have to, you know, live any of that. So he put his lights on and I pull over. And I instantly put my phone on speaker because I knew it was about to be something, because I wasn't speeding. I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was just driving. So by the time I put it in park, you know, he rushes up to the door and tries to yank me out the door. I don't go all the way because I still have my seatbelt on. So I unclick my seatbelt, and then he yanks me out the car. And when he yanks me out the car, his backup partner has a gun to my head and said, turn your black around. So I turn around. And I got my hands on the car, and I'm looking like, yo, what are y'all doing? Mind you, it's no protocol, no routine, no driver's license, no registration, like none of that stuff. They just went straight from 0 to 100. And so the initial officer is kicking my ankles, trying to get me to spread my legs open. And he's touching my pockets. He was like, you got dope in that car. You got dope in that car, hon. You got y'all dope boys, you dope boys. And it was a rather nice truck at the time. And I was like, no, we ain't no dope boy. He's like, let me search the truck. I said, you're not searching my truck. Like, what you talking about? But so each time I turn around to a address him because he's talking to me. He's asking me questions. His partner brings the gun closer and closer to my head. So my mom is panicking and she's going crazy on the phone. And he cuffed me. He took me by my head, led me to the back of the truck and slammed me down on the ground. And now I'm sitting down. But mind you, I have on all white and it's raining outside. Right. And each time he's asking me to still search my console and so forth, he's deliberately like kicking mud and residue on me, just basically trying to humiliate me as he asks me a question and so on and so forth. So his backup comes, and when his backup arrives, he pulls up to the curb and he's probably 5 feet away from me. And he get out the car and he got his gun drawn because he see his partner's guns drawn. And so the backup officer had a partner with him and he got out the car as well. And he's starting to look at me with a sense of familiarity, right? And so they go huddle up and I know they're talking about me because they're all looking back at me. And he comes over, he said, "Man, what is your name?" And I said, "Lavelle Moulton, man, I've been," and he said, "Man, I thought that was you." He said, I've been trying to tell them that. So he goes back over there, they huddle up. And the guy, the initial officer come back and say, "Let me see your driver license and registration." And I said, "You're supposed to ask that initially. I'm not reaching in this car for you to have a built-in excuse to kill me." I said, "No, I'll tell you my driver's license number. I memorized my driver's license number since I was 15 years old, right?" And so I told him that, and he go back and he get in the car, I guess, and he runs the license plates and so on and so forth. And by this time, Raymond, they still don't even know Raymond is in the car at this time, right? This is the craziest thing. So he rolls down the window and he said, "Big bro, just calm down." And so now they're running up to the passenger side with their hand on their gun because he scared them. And when they run up to his side, they recognize him. And down here, every basketball player at North Carolina, Duke, and NC State is highly recognizable, right? And they recognize Raymond. They're like, "Yo, this is Raymond Felton." So again, they huddled up and the officer came up and he extended his hand and said, "Man, want to apologize." He said, "We got a call that y'all fit the description." So I just sat there and he uncuffed me. They eventually let us go. And my mom was crying. And I remember like it's the first time I felt less than a man when I was a grown man at the hands of another man. It was almost like all of the stories my grandfathers and my great uncles and all the elders in my neighborhood always told me, I instantly became one of them. I wasn't any different. I had the same experience to share.
So I want to go back for just a second. Can you explain how it is you came to memorize your driver's license number? Because it never would occur to me to do that.
Yeah, well, it's common practice. You know, where I'm from, we call them OGs. There's older gentlemen and their mentors. I had my permit and one of them was helping me teach me how to drive. And he said, "Look, always remember your driver's license number, because there will come a time where you will be pulled by law enforcement and you don't need anyone saying they have probable cause to shoot or do any physical damage to you because they believed you were reaching for a gun or some kind of weapon."
You coach at North Carolina Central, which is an HBCU, and as I understand it, you have these sorts of conversations with them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, it's my moral obligation because one day the ball is going to stop bouncing. And as a head coach, it's my job to prepare you for what awaits you, and that's a real world.
And you actually practice what you should do when you get pulled over by a cop?
Yeah, I'm a teacher at heart. So a lot of people don't know I was a public school educator for 6 years. So everything is a lesson plan to me. And so I have fun with it, you know, in terms of being creative and teaching them the principles of manhood, but also how to conduct themselves in the world and how situation and scenarios will arise with them, whether they like it or not. And they have a responsibility in it as well. So I tell them, memorize your driver's license number. Ask two times before he asks you to reach for your registration or whatever it is. Ask for permission two times. Always address him as sir, regardless of his tone, so he know and he can't ever use against you that, you know, you're being vocal and, you know, antagonizing and things of that nature.
What's it like to have those conversations? Those can't be joyful or fun conversations to have.
Yeah, but it's normal. It's our normal everyday existence, right? It's who we are. And unfortunately, it's the harsh realities of this world and what not only myself, but many people of color have to deal with, you know, both male and female. Now I have to pull my 7-year-old and 11-year-old to the side and inform them, look, yeah, this is a rated R video, but you got to watch it because this is what you have to, unfortunately, you know, deal with. So it's, to answer the question, it's become a sense of normalcy. It's who we are. It's our makeup. It's our DNA. It's one of the many obstacles that we face as Black men as we go out and try to thrive in this world on a day-to-day basis.
You called on college coaches to speak out against racism and police brutality. Many of them did, if you consider carefully worded Twitter posts to be an acceptable form of speaking out. What needs to happen next?
Unity. Let's be honest. It's been a systemic issue in this country for 400 years with people of color. And so it's not Black people's job to solve a problem that they never created in the first place, because if they could solve it, you know, they would have solved it 400 years ago, I'm sure, right? My grandfather and his great grandfather or father would have solved that problem. So we need help. And anytime there's been a change on behalf of Black people and people of color, a lot of people on the front lines that was leading that fight didn't look like us. So we need that, right? And we need everyone to show up in a unified front. And I think that's the beautiful thing about the protests. It's so diverse. It's not just us. People are starting to feel and empathize with what we've been experiencing throughout our entire lives.
Lavelle Moten is the head men's basketball coach at North Carolina Central. You're listening to Only a Game from NPR.